Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
6:13. Let's do a first caller. First caller always wins, whether it's on the air or off the air. First caller now. Let's put him on the air, Jake. 312-981-7200. By the way, you know how when you register for a website, you check off a box that says you agree to everything they ever want to do to you or your family? By coming on the air here, you agree that I can say anything I want to you, and you can't say anything back to me. Did you know that? That's our statement that you have to check off.
That's a weird
that's
rule.
The box.
So they just have to sit there?
No. You know, listen. I love when the listeners give me crap. You know that.
It's true.
Please. It's good times for me. I mentioned that we have a bunch of folks coming up. Will Fort is going to be on later. And by the way, how many times do you think people have said Forte, Fort, or 40?
A lot.
Do you know the correct pronunciation of his last name?
I thought Forte.
So did I.
It is Forte.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So when you just said Fort.
Just making sure you people are awake. Yeah. He was shooting Nebraska, which I thought he was really good in. There's a story, and I gotta ask him about it. That the director of the film, and I can't remember who directed it, but called him Will Fort for the first like two or three
really?
Days until somebody corrected him.
It's like how Mr.
Will
T
Fort. Hey, Will Fort.
You don't correct like I don't correct Mr. T when he says Angela.
Hey, by the way, you keep talking about Mr. T coming in. When is Mr. T coming in?
No, seriously, Mr. T is coming in next week. I know I say that every week, but
Sandberg
he's coming in next
is.
Week.
Sandberg, is Andrea straighten us out with you, the Mr. T connection? Because at this point, I'm not even sure she knows Mr. T.
I do know Mr. T.
Are you going to carpool with him, Andrea?
No.
What do we know? Do we know anything at this point? Do we know? Has there been any hookup?
Liar.
Oh, she's a liar. Okay.
Oh, that's my niece. No more contacts for you.
Wow. My niece, who lives in the same building.
Yeah.
Also sees him in the workout room there in the gym and says she'll get him for us.
Oh, stop it. You know, all you people, she'll get him, liar, whatever. You know what? I am the grease that makes this machine move.
You know what? I just got a note from Wilfort. He says he knows Mr. T. He might be able to bring him in.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, you guys, I'll just keep talking.
Andrew Ladd later, Ryan Dempster later, and Rick Pearson, Pat Brady, and Eric Edelstein all on politics after Chuck Todd, who is on later this hour. First caller always wins. It's another Mary in Chicago. We're overrun with Marys. It's an invasion of Marys. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Good. What are you up to this morning?
Oh, not too much. Just getting myself ready to just do my daily stuff, go outside and do some shopping, whatever.
What do you have to do today? Let's check it off. Let's look at your to-do list. What's on Mary's to-do list today?
Nothing really. Just going to pick up my grandkids from school and in the afternoon and bring them home.
You know, I'm a first-time grandparent. Have you, how many do you have?
Five.
Yeah, which one's your favorite?
They're all my favorites.
Oh, that's not true. Come on, Mary. It's just you and me and 500,000 listeners.
Love them all.
Good call by you. Don't let me break you down. Nice job not breaking the grandmother code.
That's right.
Listen, here's what I have for you, amongst other things. I have tickets to see Thornton Wilder's Our Town. Playing at the Lila Arts Center in downtown Des Plaines. That's a great show. An Apt gift card from Apt Electronics, ABT Electronics. See my friend Steve Shapiro. A Lou Malnati's gift certificate. I assume you like pizza.
Love it.
LouMalnati's.com. And we'll give you the ChevyDriveChicago.com WGN Radio stainless steel travel mug along with a bag of Papa Nicola's coffee courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, and I really appreciate you being on every morning. I love your show, and
you're the best.
Congratulations on your new grandchild.
Yeah, grandmother is here today. Maureen is going to run out and have the Abigail Day, as we call it.
Please love her to death.
You
love
got
her,
it.
Love her, love her.
Thank you for that. Thanks
bye
for the
bye
advice.
Now.
Hold on. Don't go away. Don't go away.
What are we doing again?
We're taking apart my marriage.
Whole house is just lovely.
Aside from the appliances, it's the kind of house people dream of living in.
I hate this house. It's just shiny stuff.
A couple of clips from Demolition, or a clip from Demolition, and Nick's here to talk about the movies. Nick DiGilio at Nick D Show on social media. Just got off the radio a little while ago. How was your show?
It was good. It was good.
How would you like on a 1 to 10?
On a 1 to 10?
What, the band quit? Band kind of quit early there.
What happened?
I don't know, the bump music. The band just kind of quit on us.
Yeah.
What happened there? On a 1 to 10, your show, how was it?
A 20.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't play around, man.
Okay. Let's run through some movies. You want to start with Demolition?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the only one that I'm interested in this weekend. It's Jake Gyllenhaal plays this guy whose wife is killed in a car accident, and he goes through this mourning period and grieving period, and he begins writing a series of letters to this vending company because on the morning that they got into the car accident and his wife died, he tried to get a pack of M&Ms out of a machine, and it got stuck, and he wants his money back. And he writes this as some sort of form of comfort. So he writes repeated letters to this company about his anger, and a woman who works for the vending company sees his letters and hears his messages and calls him back and becomes interested in his honesty and what's happening in his life. They form a friendship, and then this introverted guy who is mourning starts a friendship with her young son, and they begin like destroying his house, and he's basically taking his life apart and building it back up. Chris Cooper is in it, Naomi Watts is in it, as I mentioned, and Jake Gyllenhaal. It is from the director of Wilds with Reese Witherspoon and Dallas Buyers Club with Matthew McConaughey. So this guy, this director, gets really great performances out of the actors that he works with. I mean, if you look at Wilds, Reese Witherspoon, best thing she's ever done, and Dallas Buyers Club with Matthew McConaughey, best thing he's ever done. So I'm really looking forward to it because I'm a huge Jake Gyllenhaal fan. I've been a fan of his for a long time, and that's the one that I'm most excited about this weekend.
You like Maggie Gyllenhaal?
I do, yeah. I think it's a talented family, very talented family, and their father, Stephen Gyllenhaal, is a great director and a great cinematographer who directed and photographed many of the classic episodes of Twin Peaks. So it's a really talented family.
Yeah, well, they do. It's like the Manning family. They have a third sibling. It's a brother named Shep. Shep Gyllenhaal.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about Shep.
Yeah, he's not in the business. All right, what about Hardcore Henry?
I can't make heads or tails out of this. This is a science fiction, crazy, over-the-top action movie about a guy who wakes up in a lab. They turned him into half a robot. Apparently, he has incredible killing skills. And this woman is kidnapped who claims to be his wife, even though he has no memory. And he goes after the people that kidnapped her. The gimmick here is that this movie is shot from first-person point of view for the entire running time. I've seen the trailer for it, and I don't think I'm going to make it through 90 minutes of this. It's to me, it just seems like you ever go to someone's house and have a good time watching someone else play a first-person shooter video game? No. No.
So it's funny, though, that you would ask me that. I'd like now the entire audience to pause and try to picture me going to someone else's house to watch them play video games.
I just thought you did that all the time.
No, it's not on the agenda.
Wow, I thought that was one of your favorite hobbies.
Do you know one of the highest paid the highest paid YouTube star on the planet is some chucklehead from Europe who plays video games and people pay to watch him?
Yeah, there's the whole, I was unaware that this was a thing, because when I saw the trailer for this movie, this Hardcore Henry, I was like, who the hell wants to watch this? I mean, I don't understand this. And then I mentioned this on the air, and both Esmeralda and Dan Chagrou, my producer, and Esmeralda Leon, who does traffic on my show, who are roughly like 15, 20 years younger than me, were both like, no, that's a thing, man. People do it. People like to watch other people play video games. And I'm like, when did that happen? Where am I? What planet am I on?
I don't understand why. Why would that be a thing?
On what level would that be interesting?
The only time I ever watched anyone play video games was when my kids would play video games. And prior to that, it was when I'd go to the mall because I wanted a turn on Pong.
Right. At Spencer's or at the arcade.
Right.
Yeah. I don't get it. And anybody who has, like, I watched the trailer's less than 2 minutes long. And, you know, I was like nauseous. During the trailer, this thing is 96 minutes long. I predict lots of vomit cleaning in theaters this weekend.
The motion sickness thing, did they warn you of that?
No, not that I know of. I mean,
because there are movies that do that. What was the shaky camera movie where that was an issue?
Blair Witch.
Well, Blair Witch.
Blair Witch was the first one that really sort of did that. That one didn't bother me. You know which one really bothered me? Was Cloverfield.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Oh, my
that's right.
God.
The first
Cloverfield.
One.
Cloverfield. Not the one with Goodman, the sequel thing with Goodman, but the original big monster movie.
Yeah.
I had to look away from the screen several times, man. I mean, that, and they ended up putting signs up when Cloverfield came out, and Blair Witch. Those were the two big ones. But the shaky cam thing, that's a style now. And now maybe there's going to be a whole style where, you know, first person. You know, imagine the beautiful, elegant one-take shot that John Carpenter does to open the original Halloween, you know, where the little kid is outside, he puts the mask on, and he stabs the girl to death, all from that point of view. Now, imagine somebody with about one-eighth of the talent doing that.
Yeah, doing a POV thing. Yeah, who needs it? The Boss with Melissa McCarthy, going to be any good?
You know, I got to say this, man. This one is, you know, written by her and her husband, directed by her husband, Ben Falcone, who's been in, like, every movie that she's been in. He's got a small role in this one. He's a very funny guy. And I think Melissa McCarthy's great. You know, I've loved her in a lot of things. I loved her all the way back to the Gilmore Girls. She was Suki on the Gilmore Girls, and I loved her in that. But, man, it's getting pretty one note, don't you think, Steve?
Yeah, I do think that, and I think she's way too talented to keep making bad movies because she's got Hollywood power now, like just about everybody would ever dream of. And I think she's got to pick better projects. In the meantime, I will say this, Spy, which is all over your cable now for the next 30 days, it has very funny moments in it. And there's a guy in that, Jason Statham, that just steals that movie. Well, but that's an entertaining movie. That's funny.
You know, it's a pretty funny movie, I have to say. But I will say this. When did you ever expect to voluntarily say the sentence, I want more Jason Statham?
I want Jason Statham, but I want him only in comedy.
That's the way I felt. After I saw Spy, I'm like, this guy's the best thing he's ever done.
That's very funny. All right, John, the radio tonight?
You got it. Oh, yeah, it's a Fly Jams Friday. And straight out of context, so give me some content, guys. I hope for, you know, I always expect it from you guys.
Well, please, this show is nothing but out of context. all right, thanks, man. Oh, love theme for Donald
Trump.
But sir, with all due respect, that's the argument of a five-year-old.
I didn't start it. No, it's nothing.
Yeah,
no, it's
the argument of a five-year-old is he started it.
He was grabbing me. Am I supposed to press charges against her?
You look at that tape. He was very, very seriously maligned, and I think it's very unfair.
I got a very unfair question from somebody, but we don't even talk about that.
You know, I say we don't win anymore. We don't win. We never win.
I got the most votes. I should win. I mean, it's very simple. I got the most votes, and I didn't get the most delegates, right?
So the Republican Party hasn't treated me properly.
Poor little Dunny. At least he's home now.
Thank you, darling.
Trumpster. The Trumpster is back home with a big lead in New York. Chuck Todd standing by. Chuck Todd from Meet the Press standing by. We love Chuck. Good morning, Chuck. How are you?
Good morning, Steve.
And with the Trumpster back in town in New York, it's a home game. Is the lead real?
Yeah, I think the lead is real. When you think about what happened to New York Republicans over the last few years, you know, there was a guy, not as well known as Donald Trump, but in a very aggressive, blunt speaking way, a guy named Carl Paladino, and he blew the doors off a gubernatorial primary a couple years ago in New York. Very Trump esque in his rhetoric and stuff like that. So I think Trump. Where the Republican Party is there in nature. I mean, Trump should do well. The question is how well.
Well, yeah, what do we think about turnout? Is it going to be big?
It should be. I mean, I think in general there is sort of a – look, this is his home state. He's polarizing there too. There's a curiosity aspect, all of those things. So I think it'll be good turnout as well.
The other side of the coin here gets interesting because Bernie Sanders is – Bernie Sanders essentially saying the superdelegate game is rigged, and Hillary Clinton made a point, which, you know, it's frankly, it's hard to argue with. Bernie knew what he was getting into and knew that these were the rules when these were the rules. But you made a great point, I think it was yesterday when you were talking about this somewhere, that there's a challenge you could make to superdelegates, right?
Well, there is. I mean, look, Sanders is getting increasingly, you know, it's funny, it's he touched it, whatever it is, whatever that is. You know, I think when he first ran, you know, he claims this isn't the case, but I think when he first ran, he wanted to make a point. You know, I don't know if he fully was ready saying he wanted to be president, but he wanted to make a point. He wanted to move the party. He wanted to see if his message would resonate. And then he was almost too successful. And I think whatever it is, he touched it. He wants it now. And now that it's slipping away, you can tell, right? Because he's getting a little more bitter, a little more upset. He's lashing out a little bit. And I think it's just more of the pressure of the moment. You know, he wants to win. And suddenly he realizes he really has like 12 days, because if he's going to beat her and if you're going to talk superdelegates into flipping, you got to win a state that she was supposed to win. Every state he's won is a state where he had a built-in path going in.
Right.
New York is a state she should win. An upset there, then there's something going on.
What is the best answer for him that he's not giving when it comes to this gun question? He had maybe the most awkward moment I've seen him had. Well, that's probably not fair because Bernie has a lot of awkward moments. But a bad moment for Bernie yesterday when the Newtown argument was brought up. There's a Newtown family that wants to sue the gun manufacturers, and Bernie Sanders, who comes from a gun-favorable state like Vermont, said no to that, and his argument of equality was that she voted for the Iraq War. I mean, it just was a bad moment.
It was. Again, I think I go to the point of he's lashing out. Look, there is no good answer in a Democratic primary that he has on this, from the gun manufacturers. Look, I think he gives a very rational answer for it, which he says, if somebody gets, harms somebody with a hammer, we don't sue the hammer, the company that made the hammer. It's the person who did it that's responsible. It's certainly a very rational argument that he can make, but in the Democratic primary, it's just not one that's going to gain traction.
Yeah, I don't know how any Democrat could ever win making an NRA argument.
That's the problem. If you separate the NRA out, again, I go back. I think it is a leap to be able to say, it's like, okay, do you hold a gun manufacturer responsible for a shooting? At the same time, this issue of holding gun manufacturers accountable for their marketing. Okay, we did that with the tobacco companies. So there is some precedent there. But again, I think in a Democratic primary, he's just not going to be able to sell his position.
You know, we hope for Chuck's obviously in D.C. We hope for a Caps Blackhawks Cup final, but in lieu of that,
I think it's hilarious. Look, I tell you, with the Caps, and I'm not gonna. I grew up in Miami, and hockey just wasn't a sport down there. But I've been here long enough, and I'll jump on the bandwagon for the Caps. Caps fans are so, what would you call them? They're just. There's an expectation of, okay, when does the hammer drop? Here the Caps are blowing the doors off in the regular season. They've had the best player in hockey now for whatever it is, a decade. And usually they play the Rangers or the Penguins in the playoffs and lose.
Right.
I think it's cute. You think we're going to get to the
– Well, no, my point was going to be, because I'm going to give you a better equivalent, the Nats. See, because the Nats, Nats-Cubs NL final – I think that I can get you. I can get you there.
You can, and Nats fans, we're amused. We're like, fine, make the Cubs the World Series favorites.
Yeah, because look what happened to us.
Exactly. there's something about this season that I feel better about the Nats, because the pressure won't be there. Right, the pressure's all on the Cubs. No one's going to pay attention, and very quietly the Nats will be in the playoffs, and we'll see what happens.
Somebody asked me the other day about this. I'll let you go on this, but Chuck has to swim in this pool all the time, not the baseball hockey pool, the politics pool.
The pool of life.
And you know what a nut I am for this stuff, too, but I get, tired of it at different times. There's got to be times where you just go, shut it off.
Yeah. I assume you mean the campaign.
Yeah, but I mean, there's got to be a time where you walk through the office or whatever and go, I need 10 minutes where I don't hear Trump or Hillary's voice or anybody else.
Well, I'll tell you what I plan on doing for a couple hours today. It's opening day at Nats Park.
Right.
So that's 3 hours where I hope to have. But the only presidents we worry about are our racing presidents that run around the field in between innings.
And frankly, I think that's how we should decide this race.
Not a bad idea.
You know what? I think even Trump and Cruz would accept that at this point.
Can you see Trump, though? He'd go, Ted Cruz tripped me. Lion Ted tripped my mascot. Lion Ted tripped my guy with a giant head.
Just saying, it's actually very believable. I think both would do whatever it took to win.
There's no question. Nice talking to you. We'll see you Sunday.
You got it, Steve.
Thanks, man. And I'm proud to be
be an Okie from Muskogee.
Merle Haggard died 79 years old.
A place where even squares can have a ball. We still wave old glory down at the courthouse. And white lightning still the biggest thrill of all.
He still used to get together with Willie, and he had tour dates scheduled, several shows in April throughout the summer. And listen, it's Merle Haggard. You got to like old country to like Merle as much as, you know. I like him because he's classic. He's classic Merle. Merle Haggard, man, that's it. When Willie Nelson goes, "I wish I could sing like Merle Haggard," well, there's something. And he and Willie made an album a couple of years ago, which looked like the two craziest uncles you ever had sitting around with guitars. And they just killed it. So anyway, 79 years old, a great, great career. He's had some significant health issues recently. And not to say he hadn't abused himself a little bit through the years as well. And but that's a heck of a run. And if you take a look at his song catalog, holy mackerel.
I always liked him.
Dude had like 40 number one hits.
Mm-hmm.
So, Merle Haggard, gone at 79 and passed away on his birthday. Did you ever meet him?
I never did.
Yeah, he'd like you.
I bet.
Yeah, he'd like you.
I'm sure.
Merle always liked the ladies. Coming up after 7 o'clock, Pat is here. Pat Brady, we just heard from Eric Edelstein and Rick Pearson. And then an abbreviated edition of politics, because at the end of the hour, we're going to talk to Mike Johnson, senior editor at Golf Digest, about the Masters. And has the actual ceremonial first tee shot gone off yet?
That's in about 10 minutes.
And do we know if Palmer's on the grounds?
We know he's on the grounds. We don't know if he's going to actually swing a club. He has said he won't, but we'll see.
86 years old now.
Mm-hmm. And not moving around great, but he's...
Well, Dave, as you know, your golf swing comes from your legs, and mm-hmm. if you're limited to just using your upper body, and right. Palmer's still as strong as an ox.
Right.
You know, he can't get it out there the way he'd like, and he right. certainly doesn't want to top one off the tee or snap hook at 50 yards.
And that's what he said. He has a lot of pride in what he's accomplished in his unbelievable career, and he doesn't want to get up there and not hit it the way he wants to hit it.
And Palmer always had that crazy swing, that chicken wing swing. And I think at this point at 86, he could crack a hip just with a follow-through.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to be careful, kids. So busy show, and then later Will Forte and Andrew Ladd from your Chicago Blackhawks. If you want to get a question in on Breakfast with a Blackhawk, you could email me to the email account I still don't have the password for that everybody else gets to see but me. That's Steve Cochran at WGNRadio.com. Send in your question to the MB Financial Bank's Breakfast with a Blackhawk. So here's a question I'd like to ask a Blackhawk. And if we pick your question and we do it on the air, you get yourself an autographed puck from the Hawks.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
The tax dodging that is taking place in Panama. Wealthy people and large corporations figuring out ways to avoid paying their fair share of taxes.
Outrageous tax havens and loopholes that super rich people across the world are exploiting in Panama and elsewhere. Now, some of this behavior is clearly against the law, and everyone who violates the law anywhere should be held accountable. But it's also scandalous how much is actually legal.
So, Vladimir Putin's cellist, David Cameron's father, the Pope, and the Prime Minister of Iceland walk into a bar. That's the Panama Papers so far. All right, the Pope's not involved, but it just always sounds like a setup for a joke that is missing a penguin. But this story, Rick Pearson, who joins us now at Rep 30, this story is just kind of getting started.
Yeah, it is. And in fact, part of the problem is that there are so many documents involved here, and it's kind of amazing that this was all put together. You have this team of journalists throughout the world basically setting up a network so that they could communicate and try to figure out exactly connecting the dots on all of these leaders that are taking advantage and parking money in these tax havens.
Even if it's legal, it's still beyond shady, and a lot of it isn't legal. At least that's what we're finding.
Yeah, and frankly, there is a lot of illegality when it comes to these various businessmen and how they got these schemes to be able to assimilate the wealth that they could take advantage of these havens.
Rick, let me ask you, names of hundreds of Americans have surfaced in the Panama Papers. How high up do they go?
Well, you know, that's frankly, that's still part of the work that's going on and trying to connect the dots. But, I mean, there is no doubt. I mean, you've always had this issue of going offshore, finding ways to hide tax money. In fact, you had the Treasury Department earlier this week announcing new rules to try and prevent companies from taking advantage of U.S. tax laws by incorporating in other countries. And while it works for corporations, the same holds true for many individuals as well.
Let's come back home for a second here, because in Springfield, the governor says to Mike Madigan, hello, hello, I'm out here. He's trying to sing a little Adele song to him. And what's Madigan's response? Because last I heard, the House was really busy, but they did show up for a day or two of work.
The legislature was in session. They're in session today. They've canceled work tomorrow. Republican leaders have offered up Friday as a meeting of the four leaders. No word yet on whether that meeting will actually take place.
You know, your paper, the Chicago Tribune, and others have made this point. I'm sure it's fallen out of my mouth at one point or another. The governor, does he go over to Madigan's office and knock? You know, is there something other than press discussions on why we're not getting together?
Well, one of the questions is anything going to change? If everybody's going to stay in their hardline positions on both sides, then there is no reason to talk. And as far as all of the evidence and rhetoric suggests, everybody is still on that page. And as I've said before, frankly, you know, this could continue through the November election. And when you have the general election, to see if that actually decides who's a winner and who's a loser. Because as long as both sides think they're winning the argument, they're not going to give up their hardline positions, despite all of the calamity that's taking place.
President's in town today. We'll talk with Valerie Jarrett in just a second. But before I let you go, what's going on with the new police super?
Rahm expresses 100% confidence in him. People have, you know, questioned the vetting process, those kinds of things. But Rahm says, again, that this is the right guy at the right time. He knows the streets of Chicago. He knows the issues in the police department. There's still some concerns about coming from the police department. Is this just going to be more of the same, or is Eddie Johnson actually going to affect change in the department? But he is the guy.
Is he officially hired, or is there still some sort of process we have to go through?
Yeah, there's still some sort of process, although the mayor is working through the council to try to circumvent having to do a whole new research that would, in essence, end up with him getting the job.
All right, buddy. Rick Pearson in your Chicago Tribune, online at chicagotribune.com. Sunday mornings at 7. It's a Sunday spin. You got a guest you want to plug?
I've got State Senator Andy Menar. He's the Democrat that's offering up a new plan to rewrite how the state doles out money for schools. Very controversial. Also have Congressman Bob Dole with me.
Thank you, sir. And Valerie Jarrett joins us now at VJ44. Are you back in town yet?
No, we're heading there shortly.
Welcome back in advance. And I assume a good portion of the day is going to be spent talking about the hopes that Merrick Garland will get a fair hearing.
Well, that's exactly right. The president's looking forward to returning to the University of Chicago Law School, where he taught on the faculty of constitutional law, I might add, and have a conversation with one of the country's renowned constitutional scholars, Professor David Strauss, and many of the students from the University of Chicago. And so they're really, really looking forward to having a conversation about both Judge Garland as well as the importance of the judiciary.
Valerie, good morning. So he's essentially going back to class.
He's going back to class with the hopes of having an interesting conversation. It gives him opportunity to talk about Judge Garland's impeccable qualifications. As he has said time and time again, there's never been a nominee to the Supreme Court with more federal judiciary experience than Judge Garland, and he's a consensus builder. He has an excellent reputation for working with his fellow colleagues to try to bring together a consensus on the court, which we know is very important. Obviously, the Supreme Court is the highest court of the land, and Americans all over our country look to the Supreme Court to be the ultimate arbiter on important decisions that affect the American people. And the other thing about Judge Garland, he's just a good and decent man. I was looking at a piece this morning about, even though he's in the middle of a Supreme Court confirmation, he still tutors the students here that he's tutored for so many years, and he's committed to the community. You just couldn't find a better pick. So today provides an opportunity for the president to talk about him as well as the court and why the Supreme Court is so important to the American people.
Clearly a solid pick. I think those on both sides of the aisle would agree with that. However, what is the likelihood of his hearing even being heard or his confirmation even going through?
Well, we're optimistic. Obviously, it was disappointing the night that Justice Scalia died to hear Senator McConnell say flat out there would be no hearing, there would be no confirmation, that we needed the people to speak. Well, you know what, guys? The people spoke when they elected President Obama to a four-year term 3 years ago. So he still has the balance of this year. That's more than enough time to have someone confirmed. I would also add that initially, obviously, Senator McConnell didn't want his fellow Republicans to even meet with a nominee, and already we have 16 senators who have agreed to meet with Judge Garland.
So, and by the way, led by Senator Kirk here. Exactly. Yeah, Senator Kirk here got the ball rolling.
He was the first senator to meet with her. Senator Collins met with Judge Garland yesterday. She said he's well-informed, thoughtful, impressive, extraordinarily bright, and with a sensitivity towards the role assigned to the Constitution. That's a Republican senator. And so we are building momentum and are optimistic that when the American people speak out loudly to their representatives, that we'll have a hearing.
It's an absolutely ridiculous argument. It couldn't be more childish and foolish. And, you know, there's nothing that really hasn't been explored here. And I don't know if there's anything that could even be discussed yet. But what happens if Clinton or Sanders wins the White House, but the Republicans somehow maintain control of the Senate? They're going to hold their breath till they keep turning bluer?
Well, that is the question here. The institution is a very important institution to our country. And by doing something which is unprecedented, never before in our nation's history has the Senate said that they won't even grant a hearing to the president's nominee. The president did his job under the Constitution. It's now time for the Senate to do theirs. And I would point out that the last time we had an example like this where we were in an election year, we had a Republican president, President Reagan, who nominated Justice Kennedy. The now Vice President Biden was chairman of the judiciary, which means it was controlled by the Democrats. And guess what happened? It passed 93-0 in an election year. And I would add that Senator McConnell voted for the nominee. So this notion that we shouldn't have a nomination or a hearing in an election year is just nonsense. Nonsense. We have precedent on our side. We have the importance of the Supreme Court on our side. And most importantly, we also have the American people on our side. Poll after poll demonstrates that the American people think that it's fair to give him a hearing. Just give him a hearing. Let him speak for himself. Let the senators who have concerns ask questions about him. That's how our democracy has always been intended to work.
And if you're listening,
that's what we're going to work to see happen.
Wherever you're listening around the country this morning, just let your elected representatives on all levels know this matters to you and to get on with it, and that all three branches of government matter, and let's stop acting like one is superior to the other. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Safe travels.
You're welcome. You summed it up better than I could, so I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for that as well. At VJ44, it's Valerie Jarrett, Senior Advisor to President Obama. Let's come back with Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady and kick some more stuff around. I'll tell you the story of the unfortunate name change that has to happen to the Anthony Scalia School of Law at Harvard, or as we like to call it, old ASS.
I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried. Mama tried. Mama tried to raise me.
Nothing like old country lyrics. Merle Haggard died yesterday at 79.
To blame, 'cause Mama tried.
726, Pat Brady's here. Pat, where do you work?
Next Generation Strategies.
And how about you, Eric Edelstein?
I work at AL Media.
And both of you are knee-deep in politics because for some other reason you had no other skills in life, and this is the path you both chose. Is that accurate?
No, I watch the Golf Channel till 1:30 in the morning, so I have two skills now.
Oh, I see. So you could watch TV and do this?
Yes.
It's addicting, isn't it? Masters
oh
Week?
Oh, completely.
Watching David Duvall explain why Jason Day misses so many fairways at 1:30 in the morning. I'm like, okay, I got to turn this off.
Yeah, that's when you know you have a problem. Yeah. Eric, what got you into politics?
Just basically had no skills.
No other skills. So I was actually right.
Yep. Pretty much.
Okay.
I mean, I was going to be in the NFL, but I didn't have the size, speed, skill, or talent.
Or talent.
Right.
Hey, those four things.
He went to the University of Chicago Law School.
I did. Actually, Professor Strauss, who Valerie Jarrett said the president's comedian, was a professor of mine. He's a great professor.
So you didn't just show up. You actually got in and attended?
I did attend.
So qualified
I attended
for attendance.
Sometimes.
Okay. Yeah. We had to. By the way, I misspoke. It wasn't Harvard. It was George Mason University. That decided to honor the late Justice Scalia by naming the University Law School for him Antonin Scalia School of Law, or as it turns out by way of acronym, ASSOL.
Some would say appropriate.
Or ASS Law, hashtag ass law. They're now changing it to Antonin Scalia Law School, ASLS.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. So there you go. At 727, let me go in reverse order here. Rahm Emanuel has picked his choice for the new superintendent of police. As far as city politics goes, where does this go?
Well, it was certainly an odd head-scratching process. He probably ended up in the right place given the politics of the city, the sort of revolt of the city council, the seeming low morale of the Chicago Police Department. You know, It always reminds me, you know, the outsiders come in and say, we're going to do a nationwide search and find the greatest person. And then you find the institution says, well, hey, what about us? You know, and it's a classic clash.
It never happens.
Of personality. Yeah, I remember being in government at a very young age and thinking, we found this star and the constituency that it would serve. They said, well, we don't know who that person is.
It's not going to happen.
It's not our guy.
When they set these things up, you just slap it. Okay, thanks.
but again, from what I've heard, he's a fine officer and hopefully for all of our sakes. I think he can begin to turn this thing around.
I've got to say, though, I was thoroughly underwhelmed by the three choices that were presented before, which I think makes it easier for the mayor to say, no, I'm going in a different direction.
It might have been set up that way.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, right? Am I a conspiracy theorist here to say it looks better for Rahm to say I'm picking my guy if we go through the process and the three that are actually picked are people that maybe aren't ready for Chicago?
Well, Eric may know better than me, but do you really think that Rahm's going to give that pick up given the current environment?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, look,
all the way given.
I think Lori Lightfoot did a fantastic job. Were there other people out there? I don't know what the whole process was. You know, I do think that probably ending up back with a homegrown candidate made the most sense.
In this environment, homegrown, absolutely.
Yeah.
And keeping a certain constituency involved and happy, absolutely.
Police like him. The community likes him, and he started as a beat cop.
That guy, that really was. Laquan McDonald got executed, and that people need to be listened to for a while.
But why couldn't the process be such that we don't have to go through this dance, this silly dance, where the three people, you know, feel like they're finalists and then they're not?
Well, these laws were set up, I believe, you know, in the wake of a previous generation's tragedy regarding the police department. And so, look, the mayor's hands were tied a bit. There was a process that had to be followed here. Now, whether they undo that, sort of change it going forward.
It just sort of felt like the Rooney rule to me. You know, let's interview people and then let's hire who we're going to hire anyway.
Yeah, a little bit.
So,
is Charles Ramsey still getting his $350 an hour consulting fee? I'm just curious now that we have an interim.
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, but the city ought to respond to that. So, as a matter of fact, why don't we call City Hall this morning and ask him? And then call him again tomorrow.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Donald Trump destroyed himself last.
Well, you're saying he's made one gaffe and mistake and blunder after another in the last 2 weeks. It's been a terrible two. You're exactly right. But that doesn't negate the fact that the establishment desperately wants to bring down Trump. And if it succeeds in bringing him down, Mr. Cruz ought to watch his back, because they don't have him in mind as their leader.
My memory might be failing me, but I don't remember you talking like that when you had a couple of losses.
Well, no, I didn't, but I...
And you know why you didn't?
You know why you didn't bet?
Because you're a magnanimous individual, because you're a classy individual. This seems childish, petulant.
What's going on at Fox News, where Fox News is calling Trump childish and petulant, and Obama's going to be on with Chris Wallace on Sunday? What? What? Has the universe turned upside down? Donald Trump, by the way, last night in New York, recited the lyrics from an Al Wilson song called The Snake in the middle of his campaign speech. It's getting crazier. It's 7:43. All right, before we get to, and we don't have to take long with this because I know the answer. Before we get to the campaign 2016, each of you, Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady, Springfield, anything?
Yeah, Republicans have bills in committee to deal with all these problems. The speaker won't meet with the governor, and he won't call the bills. They were out of session for a month, and they're not going to be in session tomorrow. So the Democrats don't want to act on anything.
Eric, your witness.
Well, I think that Democrats will act as soon as the governor stops being unreasonable on this anti-worker, you know, anti-union agenda. And as soon as he's willing to put that aside and actually focus on what the challenges are facing the state, we might actually get somewhere.
So nothing's changed?
Exactly.
Okay, just wanted to be clear on that. All right, so Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton are starting to hit each other like Republicans.
Yeah.
Does this make you uncomfortable?
No, you know, it's a little bit, you know, we're heading to the hockey playoffs. It's getting a little chippy, you know, like those long playoff series where you get tired of seeing the same person across the face-off from you. So, look, I think this is a natural process. It's been a long campaign. They're starting to get under each other's skin. But it comes nowhere close to the sort of mud fight we're seeing on the Republican side. And look, I think you know, primaries bring this out. I'll say what I've said before. I think the Sanders challenge ultimately makes Hillary Clinton a better nominee. Nothing that happened in this past week in Wisconsin fundamentally changes the delegate math. She's heading into Maryland, Pennsylvania, New York, where, you know, I expect her to come a lot closer to wrapping up this thing.
Jeff Weaver, Bernie Sanders' campaign manager, says the problem is Hillary.
Don't destroy the Democratic Party to satisfy the secretary's ambitions to become president of the United States, right? We want to have a party at the end of this that we can unify. Let's have a tough debate. Let's talk about the issues. There are sharp contrasts between the two. But let's not, you know, denigrate other people's supporters and tear the party apart.
Hillary Clinton says all of that's ludicrous.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think a lot of Weaver was trying to spin away from what was a disastrous interview that Sanders did with the New York Daily News, where he was pressed really, you know, shockingly for the first time on a lot of details. Okay, you want to break up the banks.
How
did you do it? Where's the authority?
Yeah.
And he was really ill-prepared. Maybe he was tired. Maybe he had a bad night. But it was a bad, bad interview for him.
Yeah, and you know, talking points are talking points, and they're going to get old after a while, and they're certainly old to all of us. But I don't need to hear anything more about why would somebody pay Hillary Clinton a bunch of money to do a speech.
Right.
At that point, she was offered a bunch of money to do a speech, and anybody in that position would have taken that amount of money to do the speech. I mean, it's idiotic. It's like if I'm given an offer to do a particular job for a large amount of money and I can fill the requirements of that job, of course I'm going to take that job. I don't know why that's a negative.
That's right. Well, I think in this environment of everything that's big is bad, anything that's related to a bank you attack, you know, those are salient talking points. I think that, you know, there's an interesting, I know we don't have a lot of time, an interesting piece about how, you know, the sort of anger right now, it really might be less economic than it is against the other party, you know, because
did she ever get her server back from the FBI?
see what I mean? These cheap
just
shots.
Wondering.
There's
no,
a kid named Chip at Best Buy who's picking it up this afternoon. It's 7:47. I got to get Pat in here to explain how Kasich could actually end up winning this thing, because it is actually possible.
A snake, right? On her way to work one morning, down the path along the lake, a tender-hearted woman saw a poor, half-frozen snake. Her pretty colored skin had been all frosted with the dew. Oh, well, she cried, I'll take you in, and I'll take care of you. She wrapped him up all cozy in a curvature of silk and then laid him by the fireside with honey and some milk. Now she stroked his pretty skin, and then she kissed him and held him tight. But instead of saying thank you, that snake gave her a vicious bite.
That is the Republican front runner. That is Donald Trump.
I thought that was Dr. Seuss.
Donald
Trump
talking to Melania, or is he talking to a crowd?
I thought it was Dr. Seuss.
That's from Donald Trump. It's funny you say that, because it is from Donald Trump's new book of Nightmares for Children.
Mm. I'm never going to be the same.
It's just unbelievable. It's from the new book, Make America Crazy Again, from Donald Trump. He did that last night as a campaign speech. He did the entire lyric set from an Al Wilson song.
Did they load up the teleprompter wrong there, or what happened?
I just don't know. And you know, people in the crowd, even the most, just the most ardent Trump supporters, looking at each other going, what the hell are we watching here? So, fantastic.
Hey, guys, I'm up here in the newsroom. I was actually at a rally in Milwaukee where he delivered that. It was.
Oh, he did it in Milwaukee as well?
Yeah, he did it just before the
Ryan
primary
Burrow,
there. Yeah, hi. It's Ryan. Hello. And it was very strange because he just kind of got into it and he just started reading it. And at the end, everyone kind of looks like, oh, is it over? All right, we like that. Because he actually did kind of build up passion, and then his speech from there on out was a little bit more passionate. He actually kind of starts these things pretty quiet and pretty subtle, and then it kind of builds. So that was kind of the middle point, but it was very, very strange.
And this is, again, testimony to the fact that Trump doesn't listen to anybody.
Wait, what's he talking about? He's talking about Cruz? Is that his?
Yes, he's referring to – he does a Lion Ted segue into
the
it.
Snake? Yeah. Sort of mixes his metaphors there?
Yeah, a little bit.
Like a Lion King.
He mixed
reference.
His Greek mythology the other day, too. It didn't make sense.
Yeah. So, but my point, again, is there's nobody in Trump's campaign that he listens to, including his wife.
Hey, Uncle Steve, can I say this on the radio?
Yeah.
Trump's an idiot.
Yes, she can.
I think I've said that before.
All right. Now, as a John Kasich delegate at the convention in Cleveland, forget about this whole argument about he should get out. He's not going to get out. What is the process, as best you understand it, that he could actually become the nominee?
Well, let's take a step back on what's happened the last couple of weeks. We're going to have an open convention after Wisconsin. And I think we've seen in the last 2 weeks is we finally cracked the code on how to get to Trump and make people not like him even more, even maybe some of the 35% that support him. And the way you do it is what they did in Wisconsin. They use his own words. So the words from 20, 25 years ago, some of the creepy statements he's made, which have been out in the media in the last couple of days. So they finally cracked the code. Had Rand Paul and the people that attacked him early that got shut down done that forcefully, we'd have a different race. So point one. Point two, we're going to have an open convention, which means there's going to be one vote, the first vote. And everybody's obligated by their state vote to vote for whomever. So Trump will get his 1,100 votes. Then incrementally or slowly, it becomes less and less. You're less and less tied to Trump, and it'll be wide open. So that's how Kasich gets it. He convinces party regulars, and there's going to be 2,600 delegates, and most of them are party regulars, that Donald Trump or maybe even Ted Cruz are not the right candidates.
But don't you risk angering everybody, and I'm not defending Donald Trump, but everybody who voted for him. And I know you guys joke about, oh, I got the votes, I get the delegates, I get the most votes. If he, in fact, does get those numbers, don't you risk angering everybody who voted for him just because the establishment doesn't like him?
Well, another point, the guy that's supposed
to... It's not a just because, though. It's not a just because. It's a desperate measure for a desperate time. And within the rules, there's nothing illicit about this. If it goes beyond... If he doesn't get 1237, he's not in. And if it goes beyond that first ballot and then it's an open discussion, it's happened before. It could happen again. It hasn't happened in a long time, but it's completely fair. And the fact is, anybody that's supporting Trump is going to say that the game was rigged anyway.
So it's not illegal, but no, isn't it a little unethical?
No. It's not. These are the rules. And for a guy that prides himself on being so smart and running a big organization, he has run an absolutely inept campaign insofar as reading the rules and organizing around those rules, which is kind of step one. Of running a campaign. So I don't believe he's going to get the nomination. Now, Ted Cruz is probably just as bad. So I was talking to Eric off air here. I go, if you're going to wreck the car, wreck it all the way so we can start over and fix it.
But here's an interesting twist where Trump and Cruz will be aligned on this rule 40B or 40.
Yeah, but they're not going to have the votes.
But there's going to be this rules committee meeting before the convention that's going to have more attention than any rules committee ever. Where Cruz and Trump are going to try to say, keep this rule that says if you didn't win eight states, you don't get to have your name put in nomination.
Well, the thing
they may lose, but it's going to be interesting that Trump and Cruz will be aligned in trying to have that rule come together.
It's like the worst episode of Survivor ever.
So Cruz is more likely to get the nomination than Kasich.
No.
I don't know. A second vote's wide open.
No, because he's got to get 1237 as well. And once you get into the second round, then all the delegates are up for debate. And that's when Cleveland
percentage-wise, it's not everybody's not free on the second round. It's like 55% are free, then 65%.
Right.
So it could go a lot.
But what I'm telling you is before that convention starts, you're going to have an uprising when they change this rule.
Right.
I believe Pat says they're going to change it. That says, oh, no, you don't have to have won any states.
But that rule was put into place in 2012. It's not like it goes back to 1868 or the founding fathers set it up.
But it was set up
to protect Romney back then against Ron Paul.
From Ron Paul. But it is the current rule.
And you're changing the rules just because they don't like the candidate.
They changed the rule. Every 4 years, these rules are changed. But the rules that don't change are the number of delegates and the way they're allocated. And that's what Trump is whining about now. He didn't read the rules. Cruz is cleaning his clock on picking up
delegates. But it's going to be a fire. You got to admit, it's going to be a firestorm.
Oh, it's going to be ugly.
Totally. It's going to be a firestorm when they change that rule.
Yeah, of course it's going to be ugly. But it's going to be ugly. Look, if Trump doesn't win, Trump's got people who he won't discount as senior advisors who are literally out there saying, I'm going to give you hotel room numbers of people that you can go and beat up. I mean, that's the kind of idiocy that's going on. By the way, anyone want to go to Cleveland with us?
Hello, Cleveland.
With Michael Johnson, senior editor for Golf Digest. Michael, I apologize for the delay. How are things in Augusta?
I think the world would be better off if we just let Augusta National run the country instead of the other guy.
I was wondering if Donald Trump could come to the first tee today and do a recitation of the snake poem.
Well, that might have interrupted the honorary starters, but I don't think they wanted that.
And Mr. Palmer is there but did not swing today, correct?
That's correct. It's unfortunate that he wasn't up to doing it. It's something the fans and patrons here look forward to. But seeing Jack and Gary take a swipe at it is still pretty special.
Were you on the ground yesterday when Gary Player had his hole-in-one?
I was. I was actually out there. I love walking around the par 3 course. It can get a little cramped out there. But, man, there were holes in ones left and right yesterday. Justin Thomas had two of them. Ricky Fowler had one. Mike Weir even let his son, who was caddying for him, take a swing, and he came within an inch of holing it. So it was a lot of excitement and a lot of fun.
They put the pins in favorable positions, but you still got to hit it to the right spot and have 9 aces in one par 3 tournament. That's pretty nutty.
It's very crazy, and I think they do set up the pins where the ball can kind of funnel in there from a bunch of different areas because they want that excitement.
Sure.
Mike, weather-wise, everything seems to be okay, no rain. Looked beautiful yesterday on TV.
It is beautiful. We kind of dodged a little bullet. The rain came through last night instead of this morning. It's a beautiful day. But the wind is going to be a big story throughout the week here. And starting today, 20, 25 miles an hour in the afternoon, possible gusts up to 40. And that's really going to play havoc with some of the guys who are starting late, notably Bubba Watson, Jason Day, and then the last group of the day, Rory McIlroy. They're going to have to deal with that. It's not going to be easy. Catching a break or Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, they're playing early. They have an opportunity to go out and post a good number.
Invariably, you'll have the Masters have somebody in contention in the first couple of days who your grandmother hasn't heard of. But for the most part, this really feels like one of the names is going to be the winner on Sunday.
I think you're right, because for the first time in years, it's not just one or two guys who come in as the prohibitive favorites. You can go 6, 8, 10 names down the list. Really great, solid players. I mean, we talked about before, Bubba, Day, Rory, Ricky, Steve, Adam Scott, Justin Rose, Phil Mickelson. Any one of these guys can be in contention. It is wide open, and I think you are probably going to see one of those bigger names walk away with the green jacket on Sunday.
On social media, E. Michael GW, correct?
Correct.
Michael Johnson, senior editor of Golf Digest. By the way, I owe you guys some money. I'll write my check today.
Well, you know, I got to feed the kids, so get to it.
Talk to you later. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Dean Richards, live at Channel 9. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I'm spent.
What do you mean?
Star Wars trailer came out this morning. I'm in full dork alert.
I'm surprised you and Andre haven't spoken about this already. Have you seen it, Andre?
I haven't. I couldn't wait for Dean to talk about it.
Well, good. Roll it and explain it while we watch it on our radio. Do we have the sound?
We have a little. Yeah, we. I mean, it's not going to make any sense, but to hear it, but hear it a little bit.
All right, we're going to hear it a little bit here.
A little bit. You'll get a little.
Jake will start then this, and then you'll explain it.
And I will state your name for the record.
Jyn Erso.
Forgery of imperial documents, possession of stolen property, aggravated assault, resisting arrest.
On your own from the age of 15.
reckless, aggressive, and undisciplined.
This is a rebellion, isn't it? I rebel.
Steve, this is what it's all about.
Now, what are we listening to?
It's about rebellion. Yeah. This is Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
Okay.
This is not the next Star Wars movie. This is not Star Wars 8. You know, because Disney Company doesn't already make enough money with everything that they do. What they're going to do between the releases of the major Star Wars films are these little spin-off films. This is the first one. The next one's going to be the young Han Solo movie that you may have heard about.
But where is this going to show?
This is going to show in theaters.
And it's is it a feature length?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be, you know, regular feature length film. But this story is about these young rebelliers.
So it's like rebels. A spinoff? It's like a Star Wars spinoff?
It's a spinoff that is basically set between episodes 3 and 4, which were the first and second films that were released, but are really episodes 3 and 4.
Well, this is fascinating. So
in the chronology.
Do they take footage they shot for the movie and use it, or is it a separate script?
No, completely separate script.
So this is a separate script, separate budget, all of it, but it's all in the Star Wars umbrella.
Exactly right.
This one doesn't come out till right before Christmas, right, Dean?
This year, yeah, December 16th for this one. Felicity Jones is in this one, Forrest Whitaker, Diego Luna, Donnie Yen, Mads Mikkelsen.
How about Donnie Most?
It's not Donnie Most in this one, I'm afraid. Potsy didn't make it either. But this is about a band of outlaws who plan to steal the plans for the Death Star. So you see how it kind of falls in the...
And hilarity ensues.
There's a big musical number in this. Ethel Merman, for some reason.
There's no business like show business.
There's no wars like Star Wars. So they're going to do these spinoffs. One year you'll get a spinoff. The next year you'll get a Star Wars movie. So
that's, you know, it's pretty smart. I got to say, it's pretty smart.
It's Disney. It's Disney marketing. So this comes out December of this year, episode 8. Which is the continuation of The Force Awakens that just came out, comes out December 17. Young Han Solo comes out 2018.
It's exciting. I'm on the edge of my seat.
It's very exciting.
It is cool.
And we've got this posted. I'd be shocked if it's not on WGNradio.com by now. We have it up at WGNTV.com. But when you look at the...
Well, I had Sandberg, the new producer of the show, I had her working on stuff that was relatable for the rest of the show. But as soon as you brought this up, Dean, I'm sure she dropped everything to make this her number one priority.
You should just really talk about Star Wars for the next couple of hours, seriously.
Dean, I'm already sharing it. Here we go.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've got it. I have it on my Facebook page also. Okay.
I'm using the hashtag, share this.
Do you know what the Death Star even is?
Yeah, sure. Of course I do.
What?
It's the place that Darth Vader had a summer home.
Sort of.
Kind
of,
yeah.
That's sort of true.
Is that true?
Sort of.
That's sort of true.
All right, it's 8:18.
You saw the first movie, right?
Of course. Well, I think I've seen all of them.
Okay, all right. Then you've seen them. You know what the Death Star is. When you go to watch this trailer on YouTube or wherever, also Google Rogue One reactions. There are at least 50 reactions now of these, like, dorky kids in their mom's basements watching the trailer and getting orgasmic watching it.
Just flipping out.
Hilariously funny to watch the reactions of those kids.
Was Paul Coit in any of those?
Paul Coit? No.
Yeah, my friend Paul Coit from
Paul
London.
Coit from the UK.
Yeah, and he's a Star Wars guy, I think. I think I'm right about that.
Bollocks.
It's the best. It's the best. If you say bollocks to an Englishman,
freaks out.
Man, they freak out.
They freak out.
8:18. All right, more with Dean in a second. We got a lot to talk about, including Merle Haggard, who died yesterday on his birthday at 79. And Dean and I do tremendous memorials.
I'm so happy about it.
I'm not happy about it.
You sound happy.
I'm not happy about it.
Hey, Merle Haggard died.
No, I'm not happy about it.
We get to do an obit. Woohoo.
79's a little young, too.
That's a little young. He was proud to be an Okie from Muskogee, Steve.
Right. Yeah, you're proud to be a Greek from what side of town? I don't know. It just didn't rhyme the same way.
South of Side.
Freak is the only thing that rhymes.
And I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee. A place where even squares can have a ball.
Well, that's old country, Dean.
That is country classic.
You know, he had like 30 or 40 number ones?
Sure did.
Amazing. Let me give you a country music title. You tell me if it was a Merle song. I Break for Brunettes.
No.
Yeah, you're right. Let's see. I'll Come Back as Another Woman.
I bet it is.
No.
That's Tanya Tucker.
Oh. What was the clue? What was the clue?
Double Wide Dream.
Yes.
No, that's not it.
What?
Didn't you write that?
Yeah, actually I did. The Man That Turned My Mama On.
No.
No, it's also not. No, of course. I'm starting to see a trend developing here. How about this one? They Ain't Making Jews Like Jesus Anymore.
No.
That was an actual country.
No,
hit.
It was not.
I swear to you, it
liar.
Was. I am not lying.
You're a big liar.
I am not lying. How about John Deere Green?
Yes.
Nope. Joe Diffie. How about Weed with Willie?
Yes.
You know how close he and Willie were?
They were very close.
Yeah, so of course. No, 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 it wasn't. No.
They had a number one album together last
year. Yeah, they
year,
did.
Django
yeah.
and Jimmy.
How about Did I Shave My Legs for This?
Yes.
That was Merle. No, it was Merle. No, it was Dina Carter.
What are you?
Dina Carter, yeah. How about It's Hard to Kiss the Lips at Night That Chew Your Ass Out All Day Long?
No.
Nope, that was the Cherry Bombs. I'm gonna hire a wino to decorate our home?
Yes.
Nope, that wasn't with me. Oh, you know the reason our kids are ugly?
You told me that one.
You know the reason our kids are ugly?
Yes.
No, that was Loretta Lynn.
No.
They're all no. They're just to all the 10 rounds with Jose Cuervo. I'm
trying to be positive. Again, something you told me.
A Boy Named Sue.
No. I know that one.
No, it turns out that was Merle.
That was Johnny Cash.
Oh, yeah, it was Johnny
it was
Cash.
Johnny Cash.
Merle Haggard, dead at 79. And obviously, this touching tribute is what you've come to know from Dean and I whenever a celebrity passes.
Dolly Parton said his heart was as tender as his love ballads.
I met him a couple of times. He's a nice man.
I never did.
Yeah.
I remember
looked like an old shoe.
He did, in his later years, look like an old shoe, but a very handsome man in the young days when he did.
Yeah.
Originally, the original Okie from Muskogee.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic, like early 1960s video. Looks like it was recorded in a church basement. It's very quaint. I'm not saying that in a bad way in any way. It's just very cool and very classic. And his songs are just part of Americana. So,
right.
Aside from the fact that he didn't write, what was that song you just said? I Pee in a Barrel. What was?
I Shave My Legs for This.
I Shave My Legs for This.
Well, I Pee in a Barrel.
I Pee in a Barrel was not actually
the
B-side.
Yes,
yes. So anyway, congratulations to Dean on whatever we just did and another touching. Well, how come our memorial tributes aren't sponsored?
They should be.
Yeah.
Really, nobody does, obituary. Really, nobody does obituary coverage, but certainly nobody does obituary coverage like we do.
Can I tell the story you just told me?
Oh, no. Which one?
The one that you used to do obits on the radio?
Oh, yeah. When I worked in Joliet, we would have to read the obituary. Everyone in the town who passed away.
And it's sponsored by a funeral.
The local funeral home sponsored it, so we would have to read the obituaries. Nobody wanted to do it, but during the noon hour, we would have to pre-record the obituaries.
When I was on WMRO...
I don't want to get anybody in trouble.
I don't want to try to top it in any way. When I was on WMRO in Aurora, the talk of the valley, as you may recall, the 1280 on your AM dial,
we
did a show called The Electric Classifieds, where people... It was at the classified section of the newspaper.
So you'd read the tiny ads?
Where people... No, people would call up and say, I have a used mattress
I'd like
to sell...
Single white female looking for love.
Dave, do you remember the hitching post?
Yeah, we had one outside my house when I was a kid.
No, I'm not talking about. I'm not talking about where Mongo hooked up his horse.
Oh,
no, I'm talking about on like FM stations in the early 70s would have some form of a show called the hitching post, where you call up and say, "I'm hitching to San Francisco. Can I get a ride?"
No,
I don't remember that.
True story.
I remember that.
Sure, true story.
Boy,
all over the country.
It wouldn't go over well today.
No. But it was very convenient for like murderers, like serial killers.
I'm sure
stuff.
It was. Yeah. That's crazy.
But we did have one outside my house for the horse.
I knew that. Sure.
A hitching post?
What's Charlie Sheen in trouble for now?
Charlie Sheen is being investigated by the Los Angeles police. Apparently, his ex, one of his ex fiancés, who.
One of my ex fiancés
peed in a bucket. She was an adult film actress named Brett Rossi.
Yeah, I wouldn't know.
She is accusing him of making threats against her. He claims to have a recording of Sheen threatening her life.
This doesn't appear it's going to end well because he's gone off the deep end again.
Yeah.
And it's not good. It's just not good.
Also in legal news, a judge yesterday dismissed those charges that Kesha had filed against Sony Music and her producer, Dr. Luke. She had accused Dr. Luke of drugging her and raping her. The judge threw out those portions of the case yesterday, saying that it was outside statute of limitations, outside of his jurisdiction, but also said that Kesha was being unreasonable in not agreeing to try to work something out amicably with Sony on this. So that is ongoing.
Now, her argument, her most recent argument, is that Sony said, hey, we can make this go away if you sign something that says it didn't happen.
That's what Kesha says, yes.
Yeah. It's a weird story. You know what I mean? I mean, it's hard not to give her the benefit of the doubt for obvious reasons, yet she keeps running into these legal walls that are statute and other things.
It keeps coming up over and over again. And you're right. You know, when somebody makes that kind of accusation, I think you got to take all those accusations very seriously.
Sure.
Dig through the truth and find out, you know, what's the truth in those kinds of things, because it does happen. But you know, when you get to a certain level, you know, she's pretty successful and pretty powerful in the business. She can call shots of who she wants to work with and who she doesn't. She should have been able to work something out with Sony Music. I mean, if her problem is with Dr. Luke, she should have been able to, as the judge pointed out yesterday, work out some sort of amicable arrangements.
Bizarre. Hey, one thing before we go on a much happier note, Bill Weir is back in town.
Yes.
And Bill Weir, longtime Channel 9 morning news star,
yes,
is too good for the room now, and he's back into rubbing in the faces of his Channel 9 cohorts. You like having him around this morning?
I love Bill Weir.
I mean, I do too. He's great.
I love him.
It's a CNN show now called?
It's
The
called
Something List, isn't it?
I Peed in a Bucket.
What is it called? List. What is it called? The Weir Show. When you guys look that up for me.
It's like a bucket list kind of show.
Yeah. It's Bill Weir traveling around.
I should probably find
CNN's
out because
time.
He's going to be here in about 10 minutes.
He's actually in the room now.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's standing by. He's down the hall with Paul.
The Wonder List?
The Wonder List. That's
okay,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it, where Bill Weir travels around. All right, go tell him we said hi.
Have a wonderful day, Steve.
See you, buddy.
Enjoy.
Ryan Dempster.
Steve!
Freeman, oh, he caught it right into the palm of Dempster's glove.
Ooh,
that is a little smile there from Dempster.
What would Harry say right now about this win?
Well, I gotta tell you, there's a lot of champagne in here. I haven't seen this much champagne since my wedding. We had a party just like this. It was phenomenal. Go
That was outstanding.
Ryan Dempster. We are very pleased to have Ryan Dempster with us all baseball season long. And in the afternoons with Ro, you can hear Woody, Kerry Wood, and Ro Khan. Ro Khan with Anna DeVantis. Dempster joins us now. Good morning, buddy. How are you?
I'm great, guys. I'm just sitting here getting ready to watch the Masters. I got my driver, Into the Water, Eddie. And my trusty, uneasy Edward 8-iron. So.
Yeah, I feel your pain. Lots of offense so far. Now, certainly some decent pitching, and we saw it in the Cubs opener. But around baseball, lots of home runs.
Yeah, no, they're all around baseball. I mean, a ton of them. These young kids can hit, man. They really can. There's a lot of good ball players out there, a lot of excitement. It's been a great fun week here with opening week, and the Cubs, what a great start they got off to.
What's harder from a pitcher's standpoint, April or August?
August. You know, you get into those hot dog days of summer where you've already logged, you know, upwards of over 150 innings, and stuff starts kind of getting dragging. You're maybe fighting through a little bit of soreness or some fatigue or some tendonitis, but I always found April for me was always that fun month where it was still a little cold and the hitters didn't like hitting. They're bundled up. They look like the Michelin men. It's kind of my chance to take advantage of that.
I remember a Pinella story about you when you were closing a game for Lou in Cincinnati, and it was early, may even have been the opener, and a couple of guys are on late, and you know, it's 12 degrees. And with appropriate editing for language here, I believe Lou's advice was something like, get him the F out because I'm cold.
Yeah. I'll never forget that story, man. It was so awesome. You know, I hadn't pitched in since we were in Las Vegas for some exhibition games, and it's like the first time in about 6 days I'm pitching. I get the first guy out, I walk the next guy, and I go 2-0 on Griffey, and here comes Lou out of the bullpen. We're winning 8-1. And I'm like, what's he doing? And he comes out, he goes, son, for editing purposes too, he goes, it's 30 degrees out. Throw the ball over the plate and let him hit it.
Yeah, Fidel is the best.
I'm trying to do skip, and he just turned around and walked away. It's pretty great.
And I believe the next pitch ended it, didn't it?
Shortly after that. The next pitch, while he was still on the field, by the way, I don't think he'd made it back to the dugout yet. ended up being another ball, so thank God he had his back to the field and didn't see that one. Otherwise, I might have been out of there.
But you did get out after that. I do remember that.
Yeah. I did, yeah. It was great.
Ryan, what struck you about the starts for both Arrieta and Lester in the Cubs' first two wins?
Yeah, I just think the poise, like the command, the total control they seem to be in. You know, right from jump street, it wasn't like, you know, sometimes you see it's opening day, it's your first start of the year, you get those kind of those jitters, maybe a few walks. It felt like, they were settled in pretty darn quickly. And I think it set a tone for this is what we're expecting out of ourselves this year. And then it's nice when you're able to score runs like that and get you to be able to relax a little bit more to the point where, you know, you're not worried about solo homers because you're up three or four runs, the next thing you know, five or six. And just both guys did a tremendous job of filling up the strike zone, especially once they got ahead in the game. And it was just a treat to watch both of them pitch already.
Yeah, another question, a little nuancey pitching stuff, though. Let's say you're in a three-game series and the first two guys just blow the doors off. Now the offense for the other team is a little aggravated. Is that a good night for you or a bad night to be third on that list?
I always liked that. I liked being the third night just because, especially I felt like if a team didn't score runs the first couple games, they're going to be really anxious to try and put some runs on the board. Right. And if you're smart enough, you can take advantage of that by just kind of dialing it back a little bit, teasing them with sliders or change-ups and using their anxiousness, their aggressiveness to your advantage. And especially towards late in my career when, the catcher didn't need his glove to catch me anymore. He could just – gravity was taking over. I really enjoyed that last game of the series.
A lot of things have been coached out of baseball. Some of the, you know, classic things like being able to move a runner and, bunting is the obvious example. But another thing seems to be patience. On a young team like the Cubs, how important is patience going to be down the road to, you know, make a pitcher do a little work?
Yeah, I think, you know – that was one thing to me that stood out actually so much about their lineup was I think we saw the most pitches in baseball per at bat. And, Joe really preaches that. He preaches, you know, wearing a pitcher down and fighting off tough two strikes approach. And, you know, when you can do that and you can get in that mentality of fighting off pitches to the point where now all of a sudden you do get your pitch to hit. Because pitchers are good. These guys are – the major league pitchers are really good. And a lot of times when you're facing really good ones, you might only get one pitch an entire bat that you can hit. And if you're fighting off those really tough ones on the corner and, you know, shortening up your swing so you're not trying to just always hit a homer, that eventually you'll get in a position where he might hang a breaking ball or a fastball might leak over the plate. And I think we do a really good job of that. The guys go out there, they battle really hard. And I think you're going to see an even better job of that this year when you bring in guys like – Ben Zobrist and Jason Hayward, who don't strike out a lot, and other guys start to feed off that and go, oh, wait, I don't want to strike out either. And, it definitely plays a huge role because you can do that. You can wear some guys down early in a series, and the next thing you know, you get into their bullpen on that day one. That pays huge dividends throughout the rest of that series.
And another thing I'm going to say, I've won over 1,800 games in a manager, and I'm not a damn dummy. That I can tell you. Okay? There are only 13 others that have won more games than me. So I guess I think I know what the hell I'm doing. I don't care about talking to them. I'm talking to you to you for them. But I'm tired of it. You know, and Steve Stone, he's got enough problems doing what he does with the White Sox. What job has he had in baseball besides talking on television?
God, I miss Lou.
No.
I called him a couple weeks ago. He told me a story about fishing and golf, and it had the same sort of tune. Yeah, he got more agitated while he was talking. He's the best. I tell you, Debs, all you got to hear is a little bit of Lou, and it's a good day.
It is, man. I love Lou. I really enjoyed playing for him. You know, he was he's a smart baseball man, and he treated me really well and provided some serious comic relief at times.
Ryan, remember that day back in spring training, oh, I don't know, early last month when Dexter Fowler surprisingly showed up at Mesa and no one seemed to know that he was going to be there? And now you look at what he's done the first two games. How important has this guy been to the Cubs lineup? I mean, we saw it last year, but through the first two games this season, it's really evident.
Yeah, you know what? He sets the tone at the top of that lineup. He's a tremendous leadoff hitter. He sees a lot of pitches. You know, there's nothing better than when you're batting second or third and the leadoff guy goes up there. Well, first, there's nothing worse than the leadoff guy going up there and swinging at the first pitch. Half the time, you haven't got your batting gloves on yet. You're just getting prepared, whereas, you know, Dex will go out there and he's going to see some pitches. He's going to foul off some tough pitches. He's going to get you a chance to get your timing in the on-deck circle. And on top of all of that, I think what stood out the most is you watched the response when he showed up. All those guys were so excited to see him. He meant that much to the team. And I think that was so much more important than what the product was going to be on the field. If you already, the lineup was already so good, and then you're just making it better with a guy that everybody loves, that clubhouse, they all love each other, they care about each other, they're pulling for each other. It's a special group of guys to be around him. I'm glad I have a chance to be around them and see what they do, and I'm expecting them to have just another great year this year.
Morning, Ryan. Morning, neighbor. Former neighbor.
Morning.
Hey, I want to ask you, I know it's opening week, but do you see Zobrist and Soler more specifically being long-term on this team this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I think, I think that obviously, you know, the higher-ups, the people in charge making all these big decisions, they felt like, you know, Soler wasn't a part of something. I'm sure he probably would have been gone this winter. And I just look at the strides he made, the hard work he's put in the outfield, that as time goes on, you know, in baseball terms, he's still a young guy. He doesn't have a ton of games played, and he's just learning his craft. And very few guys in this game can have that kind of power that he does to be able to just hit the ball out of the ballpark from one foul pole to the other foul pole. And I think he'll benefit from not having to face some of the tough righties that he would have to face and just get those positive at-bats that continue to build the confidence. But, yeah, I think it just provides huge depth for our lineup and a chance for us to give guys breaks. And Zobrist, what an addition this guy is, man. Just to sit around and watch him on a day-to-day basis, the way he prepares, and these young guys are going to learn so much from him.
You know, the White Sox have gotten off to a good start as well. They're 2-1 yesterday, a 2-1 loss. And a lot of times last year, there wasn't a whole lot of offense. I mean, it's way too early to get concerned, Sox fans, about whether or not they're going to hit this year. But I see a lot of real positive sides to that ball club as well.
Oh, for sure. You know, that's the thing. Is last year, to me, was going to be the exception, not the rule. They went out and signed all these ball players, free agents, and, you know, made these moves, and some of them, they didn't pan out. Well, that means that those guys have a track record, and they're due for bounce-back years to go out there on the field. And I think, you know, the addition of Todd Frazier is going to be huge. This guy, the energy he brings to the field every day in the dugout, in the locker room, he's a great personality. He's going to put up huge numbers offensively in the middle of that lineup. And I think you're going to see a bounce-back year from a few guys, and I think they're going to be a much better team than they were last year, I think. And they got a great, you know, especially their first three guys. When you have Sale, Quintana, and Rodon, they got a top three force there and a really good back end of the bullpen too. So I think way bigger things out of them this year than last year, and that'll be good for White Sox fans.
You know, and we've talked about the park ad nauseum for years, but I never understood the flack about the park. Wrigley's always going to be Wrigley, but it's not hard to get to. There's plenty of parking, and they're building sort of an entertainment district around it. They've done it slowly, but they are doing that as well. So I hope Sox fans support that club a little better than they have in the past.
Yeah, me too. You know, I always enjoyed going down there and playing there. I think once you get inside there, you look out, it's a beautiful park. It really is. They did a good job with it. You know, it's a shame that they don't get more fans than they do on a regular basis. I know for some series they'll get a, you know, pretty big crowd in there once playoffs come, stuff like that. But
They put a good team on the field. I hope that they get the fans that they deserve, because it's a fun place to go watch a game.
What are you doing today? Just watching the Masters in your underpants? What are you doing? Just sitting around?
Absolutely. I'm thinking about putting my regular pants on, and then I'm working out here in New York for the MLB Network this morning.
Well, you should definitely wear pants for that.
I was thinking that unless they just keep me behind the desk, and I don't even have to worry about it.
That's a good point.
It's a good TV
fair
trick.
Point. No, it's a fair point. See, that's why you're an expert. Listen, buddy, appreciate it. We'll talk to you in a couple days.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Thanks, Ryan Dempster from your Chicago Cubs legends. And does a great job talking baseball. Again, don't forget Woody with Rokan and Anna on Thursday afternoons as well. So, and again, whenever we need these guys, we'll call them.
I'm calm now.
I mean, for like tickets and stuff, or just to call them?
Well, whenever Lou says, but I called Lou, and this is what he said. And I said, Lou, I got to go.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with the Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
I wrote the lyrics. Spell it out. D-A-D-A-D-A-D-A. Breakfast with the Blackhawks, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business. I think we talked to Andrew Ladd about 10 minutes after he got back to town, didn't we?
We did.
And he has been tearing it up, and it is so good to have you back in a Blackhawk sweater, my friend.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun for me, too. So I must have got on the right foot with you guys and just been rolling since then.
Don't you have a baby on the way?
I do, yeah.
Like any minute, right?
We're hoping not any minute, but within the next month and a half.
Oh, yeah, so she'd still be a little early. So
yeah.
When we talk, we need some sort of safe word or signal where you got to go. And I would suggest you go with something like, I got to go, and then you hang up.
I'm probably just going to hang up and go.
Okay, that seems right. That seems right.
Yeah.
How's it feel? Because you guys have spun it on a dime here in the last few games. Just look, they're going to need a new net. You keep putting pucks in the back of that thing.
Yeah, I mean, confidence-wise, it's been great for our group. We had a tough stretch there where we weren't scoring and really just weren't playing that well. So, this is the time of year we need to be confident and get rolling in terms of how we need to play the playoff type hockey that we know we can play, and get a couple games left to finish it off and keep it rolling.
And does it feel zony? Does it feel, you know what I mean? Does it feel like that is there such thing as a team zone?
I think so. I think you get into a groove and you understand. I think there's just the right mentality that everyone has going into the game, and it kind of just gels and things happen the right way. So, I think so. I think it just comes down to the mentality. I think we know we have a lot of skilled guys that can score. And at the end of the day, we need to play great defense, and we know that the offense will just take care of itself.
I want to get Dave Ennett and Andre in here in just a second. Talking to Andrew Ladd, MB Financial Bank. MB means business. Breakfast with the Blackhawk. Yeah, back at that 2010 team and the breakup that had to occur for salary cap reasons, and a lot of good guys got away, and, you know, Ladd back now, which we're all thrilled about as well. But if there's one guy you'd go, man, it'd be fun to have him back from the 2010 team, who would it be?
You want me to give you
mine?
It's the big buff for me.
That's it. That's it.
To play with him for the last 6 years, so I was fortunate enough to do that. But so I know how much fun he is every day.
But not just the fun, to take his big derriere and put it in front of the net, and have 47 guys try to knock him over, and he always seemed in the right place for a deflection, especially in that playoff run. That was a good time.
Yeah, he's playing defense now, though, so he's on the other side. He's usually on the point now.
Yeah.
He'd be fun to have back, that's for sure.
And, of course, the reason I bring that up is we're big Bix fans around here, and I'm glad to see Brian Bickle getting another crack here.
Yeah, I saw him this morning, so it was nice to see him back. I hadn't had the chance to see him, so I think everyone around here knows what he can do, and hopefully he can help us out here.
How much, Andrew, of your recent success has been a result? I know host is out right now or has been, but since Sunday. But just you guys on that line kind of getting reacquainted and getting comfortable with each other.
Yeah, it's a big part of it. It's tough. If you've never played together before, it takes a few games just to figure out how you need to mesh. I mean, there's some skilled guys. There's guys that play, you know, kind of an east-west game, and other guys that play a north-south game. For us, I think we're better when we're keeping the puck moving forward and using our speed and our strength to really just dominate down low and create chances, quick chances off that. So that's kind of, I think, where we're headed. And you know, obviously losing hosts, sucks. But we've been able to create some chemistry, and hopefully that just runs right into the playoffs.
Speaking of quick hitters and things of that nature, so I'm at the game on Sunday, and Laddie, you know, you were there. 39 minutes and change, you're blowing the doors off. Suddenly two goals inside of a minute and then two quickies in the third. Well, relatively quick, but point being, it goes from 6-0 to 6-4. They got 10 more minutes. I mean, have you ever played in a game like that?
No. The only other one close is when we were here, I don't even know if it was, I think it was 09 maybe, Calgary came in here and we were down 5-0. We came back to win 6-5 in overtime.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I remember that.
Yeah, having a few flashbacks about that, but I guess that's why you build a 6-0 lead, right?
That's right.
Just to give up a few, but
I like your attitude. I just don't think we can count on 6 every night, but maybe that's me.
No, exactly. Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, it was didn't go the last 20 minutes and 15 seconds didn't go as we wanted it to, but you take the win there and move on.
Andrew, continue to love to follow you on Twitter. You have one of the liveliest Twitter feeds.
Oh, is that where his brother's naked pictures showed up at Christmas?
Wait, so I want to know you. There's one from a couple of weeks ago. It's you and Shazzy sitting there with a big plate of food in his hand and in his socks and his sandals, which is a great look, by the way. Are you guys just discussing politics or solving world problems? You guys look just really intent.
Politics. Yeah, I know. I don't think Shazzy's smart enough to talk about politics. Usually I just don't get a word in. Usually it's just him talking.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of just tune him out and you know, after 10 minutes or so, I'll just walk away.
Do you just nod?
Great picture.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't even know if I nod anymore. I've only been here 3 weeks too. So I just kind of let him do his thing. And then, like I said, I'll move on.
He's like everybody's annoying little brother. You love having him around, but then you got to tell him to stop it.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah, he's an awesome guy. And but man, can he talk? That's for sure.
There's a history of guys in the league who are undersized guys. That's why I loved it whenever I'd see Shad call them the Chihuahua, because dogs don't know how big they are or how little they are. And Shad take on Chara. Shad take on the biggest guy. If Shaq had skates on, Shad be the first guy in his face.
Yeah, exactly. No, but you got my as a teammate. He's one of those guys that. When I was in Winnipeg, you just hated playing against him, and then you get here, and then you realize, he's a great teammate and someone that you love to play with. So it's been fun to get to know him and see what he was all about.
You've had a chance to watch Artemi Panera now every day up close. He's got, I think it's 11 points now in his last three games. He's going to win the Calder Trophy. Top rookie scorer in the league. How good is this guy potentially going to be?
You mean sky's the limit for him. He's just so talented. I mean, in tight spaces with the puck, he's just so good with how he stick handles and controls the play. And then just how well he plays with Kaner. It's fun to watch just night in or day in, day out, whether it's practice or games. I think you just kind of get yourself get lost kind of watching them and seeing just how talented they are together. So it's been fun for me to, I think you really get an appreciation for players when you have a chance to see how they work day in, day out. And it's been fun to watch. He's a great kid. Doesn't speak much English, but he's fun to be around.
You know, Panarin, 11 points, Dave, I don't know if you know this, that's 14 Russian. With the exchange rate, that's 14 points.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, in the KHL, that's actually more. Mm-hmm. Blues tonight. You were talking about Shaughzy. It seems to me that somebody on the Blues has got to be an on-ice yapper. Is there anybody on that team that just talks a little too much?
Well, Steve Ott's probably their guy.
Yeah, there you go.
Playing. He's back yet, but he would be that man for that job.
And what's more fun than whoever it is on whatever team and shutting those guys up?
Yeah, but the only way to do that, you got to beat them. So that's kind of the plan. When you're ahead in the game, it's a lot more fun chirping than when you're behind.
Well, dude, I thought you promised us 6 goals tonight.
Did I?
That could have been somebody else. That could have been Shaw.
I'll have to talk to Kaner and Breadman about that.
We have a question from a listener, then we'll let you fly. It's from Amy. Are you superstitious at all? Do you have any pre- or post-game rituals that you got to put on your gear a certain way, take it off a certain way?
I got a really long routine that would take a long time for me to describe to you. I put my gear on the same way. I warm up the same way. I kind of get a massage at the right time. I have a coffee at a certain time.
Is that right?
The stuff that I do. So yeah.
And it's been locked in forever, as long as you've been in the league.
It's different because you come to the new team, then everything's kind of thrown off because you got to see like what other guys' routines are, because I don't want to mess with guys' routines that have been here and are locked in. So it kind of took me a week to figure out what the routine was here, and then now it'll pretty much be locked in the rest of the way.
You don't have to out the guy unless you want to, but is there any guy you've played with or seen in the league that's got a really goofy ritual of some kind? And it's probably a goalie, I'm thinking.
You know, I had a really good Brent Sopel had a really good warm-up routine. So he would get in front of the mirror and I don't know if he had wet hair or something, but he did some funky stuff in front of the mirror where he was doing kind of the headbanging in front of the mirror, and his hair was going everywhere. So always enjoyed seeing Soaps do that.
Now, did he do it for the laugh, or did he did it because he needed it?
No, I think he needed it. Yeah.
Okay. So what happens
in some way? So
this is what happens. Yeah. You're on skates. You get slammed into the boards a few times. Suddenly you're doing air guitar with everybody else in the room. So
yeah, exactly.
Great talking to you again. Have fun with Bix and everybody else, and good luck with the Blues.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks, man. Andrew Ladd, month away from being a dad for the third time.
It's awesome.
Pretty sure that's baby number 3, isn't it, coming up? A little laddie.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll take all the Twitter pictures down before the kids get wise to the internet.
Well, what would Twitter be, though, in 10 or 15 years, you know?
We got to teach them about Snapchat.
Snapchat, there'll probably be a chip in the kid's neck where they just see everything without going to even their phone.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I got a flat butt.
Do you?
Yeah, I got the white man flat butt disease.
Oh, boy, I got to tell you, that sounds awful.
Is that a bad thing?
Well, it's not great for pants. Because, honestly, I've thought about butt implants, but you just don't know what you're getting. No, I do have the flat butt disease. So, Dave, you've got a terrific tushy. Don't think I haven't checked it out.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, geez, look at the butt on that. Yeah. He must work out.
Shake that healthy butt. Baby got ballet.
I like flat butts, and I cannot lie. I don't know about like them. I almost need like a hanger in the back of my pants.
What?
Just to keep them up. That's all. I'm always pulling my pants up because I don't have a butt.
I was actually walking behind a guy the other day who had his pants,
a little droopy.
Yeah, I just don't get that fashion.
It was great for me when I was a hip-hop star because that way when I was wearing my pants down around my ankles, it made sense.
Well, okay, so why did you do that?
What do you mean?
I don't get that fashion trend.
Well, because
to me, show off your booty?
To me, it served two purposes. One, it was street, and the second, I didn't have a butt to keep my pants up.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah, that's why. 9:29. Andre made the point off the air: don't anger Mother Nature. We had just had one of the weirdest little storms move through downtown. It was the middle of talking to Andrew Ladd. There was a point, and we're situated near the North Michigan Avenue Bridge, with windows on all sides of this amazing showcase studio, the Allstate Showcase Studio. And there was a point, and it's actually going on now 2 blocks away, where you could see a rather vicious storm literally 200 yards away that wasn't hitting us. And then, inexplicably, it hit us, but from the other side.
Yeah. It was like white smoke, and we looked across the river, and we said...
Pouring rain, snow, sleet mix, whatever was coming down, literally on the river, a couple of hundred yards from where we are, but nothing here. And while we were looking at the river, crack smoke and Mother Nature brought a storm up Michigan Avenue from South Michigan Avenue to North Michigan Avenue, and I believe flattened a couple of tourists.
And now it's
tourists were scattering like ants on a beach.
And now it's snow flurrying.
Yeah, now we have flurries. So
you gotta love it.
Mother Nature's in a very bad mood. Mm-hmm. I wonder if she just got audited or something. You know, it's tax season.
There is baseball in Chicago tomorrow.
So allegedly. Hey, one other quick note: the FBI has announced that they had to order a special tool to crack in to the smartphone the terrorists were using out in California. There was that whole encryption debate and everything that went on forever that they now said, we're cool, Apple, don't need your help, case dropped. But they needed a special tool. And we did some investigation. We know where they got the tool.
Doctor, is the squirrel going to live?
There's been massive trauma. We could, of course, try to save him, but it would be costly, difficult, and we'd have to send away for some special, really tiny instruments.
That's
well,
right.
Are there any other options? We could put him to sleep.
What might that cost?
Well, it's by the pound, so about 80 cents.
That's right. That's right. Okay. We have decided to use George Costanza's tiny tools, and we pass them on to the FBI.
As you may know, I have just returned from a long and successful trip to India and Pakistan. I also made a surprise visit to Afghanistan, which no one knew about. Until I did it. Of course, I knew about the surprise the whole time. But I never let on. I got in and out before most of the Afghans knew I was even there. Which is unfortunate, because I'm sure if they knew I was there, they would have wanted to thank me for fixing their country. You're welcome.
Will Forte as George W., Last Man on Earth on Fox, 8:30 our time. Sunday's episode is one of the reasons going to be on to plug it. There's also this movie, Keanu, which is about a cat. And Will Forte has dreadlocks.
That's a neat look.
You know, ever since his MacGruber hair, you know, he's been able to be very versatile. When it comes to his hair. As a matter of fact, I'll ask him about that. We connect with him here. We're trying to connect with him in L.A. right now. But, yeah, he's been doing this for 20 years now.
It doesn't seem like that, does it?
No, not at all. Not at all. Saturday Night Live vet from 2002 to 2010. And since then, along with TV work, his film work's been pretty impressive as well. And I thought he was great in Nebraska. Really, really did. And along with Bruce Dern and... story about small towns, and if you're like me and you grew up in a small town, a lot of it rang really true. The black and white stuff was a little long for me, but...
See, I never saw it, and I'm upset. I'll see it at some point.
See it tonight.
Netflix? Okay. In the middle of House of Cards?
Don't we have a plug to do for you tonight? What are you doing tonight?
Oh, tonight we're going to be at the First Tee. Our friends from First Tee were in. There's going to be a fashion show tonight.
So and you're the MC.
I'm going to be emceeing that. Mary Sandberg is going to be participating in that. They're going to be modeling a lot of the new golf fashions that are going to be trending this spring.
Any tickets
left
for her?
If we ever get
If we can actually play.
Yeah, yeah. And let me give you the website, too. You can go. It's at, let me get the information for you.
Yeah, because First Tee does a nice job here in Chicago and around the country. And First Tee Chicago is doing the fashion show tonight. Is it women and men's fashions?
Yes, it's women and men's. It's thefirsttgreaterchicago.org. It's kind of a long website, but it explains what First Tee does. And for those who don't know, provides young people with golf skills and the equipment, because golf equipment, clubs and whatnot, even clothes are expensive. So these provides young people who otherwise wouldn't have the means necessary to play golf or to even learn the game. It allows them to play. So it's a wonderful, wonderful organization. And that fashion show is tonight. You can go to thefirsttgreaterchicago.org and still get tickets.
Last Man on Earth, Keanu, Nebraska, versatile hair. Will Forte joins us now. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Good. How are you?
Good, man. Thanks for being on. I was discussing the versatility of your hair as an actor You know, from MacGruber to braids and Keanu, you know, your hair is well trained.
Those cornrows in the movie Keanu are the most painful thing I've ever done. Have you ever had cornrows?
You know, if I had, it would have been in the 80s. If I had cornrows now, they'd be tiny. You know, they'd be tiny and mostly on the side of my head.
I was very surprised. Well, you should go for it. The side of the head is not as sensitive to me as the I was surprised that I had never heard anybody talk about how painful the cornrow process is, because it's basically somebody like pulling your hair for 2 hours straight.
Pulling your hair and twisting it.
Pulling it and twisting it and then locking it into a pulled situation, so it's just painful for however long you have them in there. It loosens up a little bit after like 2 days, but oh God, it's so painful.
Now that you know that, will you volunteer to do gratuitous nudity and violence instead going forward when they offer that scene?
Is that's the trade-off? It's either you can do cornrows or show your stuff.
Yeah, I'm thinking I show my stuff.
I don't know. I'd probably still do the corner.
Right, well, you know. Listen, I've never had a chance.
I don't have real showable goods.
I don't have showable stuff. I haven't had a chance to tell you this since the movie. That's how long it's been since you've been on the show, so I'm glad to have you back. But you were so great in Nebraska, and I think you got a lot of props
Thank you very much.
But I'm telling you, I've rewatched it several times, and I was really knocked out. I love the movie, anyway, growing up in a small town. But I just thought you were great.
Oh, God. Thank you very much. I still can't believe that I got a chance to be in that movie. It was such a dream come true. And you know, to be honest, I don't know that I would have gotten a chance to do this Last Man on Earth show or if I hadn't been in it. You know, that just helped out in so many ways. I'm very thankful for that opportunity.
But it creates an interesting predicament, I would think, right? Because your agent has got to get pitched stuff now for you that's maybe a little more serious, or maybe, you know, light comedy and things, along with knuckleheaded, crazy, off-the-wall stuff. So does Hollywood know what to do with you?
Well, I mean, I think that's an exciting place to be in. Like, to have gotten that opportunity,
right,
to show like a different side. You know, it Alexander Payne is a very, very a brave caster. I don't know of anybody else because I don't blame them. You know, I on SNL, I was just a kind of a freak. I would always do, you would more likely cast me in like a pedophile role than like a sweet, I just did a bunch of weirdo characters.
Yeah, creepy drifters, those type of guys.
Yeah, so it's, you know, to get a chance to do something like that, it's a very rare opportunity, and I'm so thankful to Alexander for letting me do that part, because it certainly was not I was not the go-to guy in Hollywood.
Well, it's a life changer, right? I mean, this is a guy.
Not even this time.
Well, it's a life changer because this is the guy that did The Descendants, which is a tremendous movie, a Clooney movie, Sideways, yeah. About Schmidt, Election, which is a great little movie. I mean, a bunch of great stuff. Anyway, I'm really happy for your career in general. I want to remind people, The Last Man on Earth on Fox, 8:30 Chicago time. But tell me about this movie, Keanu, because every time I see the commercial, I think I may be drunk.
That's a good sign. That's a very good sign. It is Key and Peele, who are two of the funniest people around.
Yep.
And one of them has this cat that gets kidnapped, and the movie is basically about them getting the cat back. And I play like a drug dealer neighbor named Hulka, and I have those cornrows there. Incredibly painful.
And hilarity ensues.
You feel like you're drunk again right now?
Well, Well, you know, it's funny because we just did that story a week ago about a college study that came out of a very respected university, though I couldn't remember which one it was now, that cat owners are more likely to be mentally ill. So it just seemed to go with the trailer.
That's, you know what? I've always been more of a dog person. I don't want to offend cat people because I love all people, and I think cat people and dog people can get along. But yeah, I've always been a dog person.
And Key and Peele, by the way, you mentioned Key and Peele.
Because I'm mentally sane.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you mentioned Key and Peele, and they are two of the funniest people. Period. I mean, they're tremendous.
Yeah.
I know you got to run and talk to other people, but it's always a pleasure to have you here. If you're ever in Chicago, we got this beautiful windowed studio we put in just for your visit. So we're right on Michigan Avenue.
Just for my visit. Oh my God, I would love to come and talk to you guys in person because I love Chicago so much. I could sit by that bean and just be looking at the bean is like endlessly fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's cool.
I mean, there's so much more to your city. I'm not saying. I'm just 100% bean.
You played Abraham Lincoln basically in the Lego movie, so we own you now.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. He's practically Illinoisan anyway.
You know, I've never been to Springfield though.
Oh, dude, you got to see the museum. Seriously, I know it's a weird tie considering the movie, but if you have any interest in Lincoln or any fascination on any level with Lincoln, the museum in Springfield's tremendous.
Oh my God! Yeah, I would love to. I went to Monticello a couple years ago, and I it was so great. I'm a history major, so I went to UCLA.
You'd love it. You'd
history
love it.
Major. I love all that stuff. So definitely Lincoln. You kidding me? Who doesn't love Lincoln?
Yeah, no, you would absolutely love it.
I do not like anybody who does not like Lincoln. That is for sure. I can tell you that 100%.
Save the Union.
One person who doesn't like President Lincoln, who I would be friends with.
Now, just keep in mind, when you go to the Lincoln Museum at any given time, no matter who you're talking to, it could be Daniel Day-Lewis. So just be advised.
That's exciting. That's a plus.
Hey, man, all the best. Good luck. And don't forget, Sunday night is The Last Man on Earth on Fox. Another very funny show. The Last Man on Earth now has about 28 friends and keeps finding more people. And Keanu the movie, opening on April 29th. All the best, man. I'm a fan.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good talking to you.